Blog Talk Radio.
To advance to the next round to take on the Miami Heat. That would be down in South Beach on Monday. So they're in a must-win. They forced a Game 7. They could be the ninth team, just the ninth team in NBA history to battle back from a 3-1 deficit. That's first and foremost. And, you know, you have to give the Bulls a lot of credit. They've dealt with a lot of injuries. And now, last night, at home, which could have been their last home game of the year, Luol Deng and Nate Robinson suffered from the flu. Nate Robinson is throwing up in a garbage can during the game. Deng sat out. I saw it was tweeted out by a couple of the Nets beat writers that Deng was visibly shaken last night. He was shaking. He had the chills walking into the Bulls locker room. I mean, when it rains, it pours. You know, you haven't had Derrick Rose all season long. He goes out there and he practices with the team before the game, and then he's in street clothes, inactive, during the game. Now, that is a lockbox that you're never going to get into. You don't know what's going on with Rose. You don't know if he's 100%. The Bulls know what they're doing. It's their star player for years to come. They're not going to run Derrick Rose out there to potentially beat the Nets to be a sacrificial lamb down in South Beach. Still got Joakim Noah. He's got the plantar fasciitis. He's struggling with that. Playing well through it, but still. Joe Johnson, same thing with the Nets. Basically flat out said last night if this was a regular season game, he would not be playing. Went out there and scored 17 points along with Darren Williams and Brook Lopez. That is what you expect out of the Brooklyn Nets. You expect that. You know, Brooklyn Nets fans shouldn't expect anything less out of that team. You know, they have the tools. They have the talent. It's about time they put up or shut up and win this Game 7 here. And if you didn't think it was coming back to Brooklyn for a Game 7, you were absolutely nuts. The injuries and the illnesses aside with the Bulls, it was coming back to Brooklyn for a Game 7. First year, the new arena, Game 7, Bulls, Nets, why not? Going to be a raucous atmosphere there. That Brooklyn chant will be going strong. They cannot lose this game. P.J. Carlissimo cannot afford to lose this game. He cannot lose to a Bulls team, okay, that has Derrick Rose on the bench, that has had Kirk Heinrich on the bench the past two games, that had Luol Deng sitting out last night with the illness. P.J. Carlissimo and this Nets team must win this Game 7. They must. You know, P.J. joked around before this series started saying, you know, they should make me coach for life. Now he said it tongue-in-cheek, and I've covered P.J. at the shoot-arounds and at press conferences, and he likes to have fun with the reporters, and he was just having fun. But I have a feeling if he doesn't win the series, he's not going to be back. You know, you want to get to the second round. You want to see what you can do against the Miami Heat team that you really didn't do anything near anything positive at all during the season. Miami manhandled the Nets every time they played them. I think the first couple, they lost. The first one, I think they lost by 30. I was back in November, if I'm not mistaken. So you're set up for a Nets-Bulls Game 7 on Saturday, tomorrow. Must-see TV. How could it not be? But your dials are going to be locked in to the Knicks and Celtics tonight for a Game 6 in Boston. You talk about Brooklyn being up for grabs tomorrow night. Think about what's been going on in Boston, you know, less than a month ago. You know what happened. I don't have to remind you. You don't think that crowd is going to be absolutely, positively bonkers for this team right now? They will be the sixth man behind this team all night. Now, listen, I think one of the silliest things in the sports vernacular is we're going into a hostile environment. Now, by definition, yeah, it's antagonistic, unfriendly, fine. But maybe the military has to change their terminology of things, because they deal with enemies as, quote-unquote, hostiles. There has to be a different word, because the connotation just, it makes no sense to me, and it's silly. If you're a professional athlete and you can't go on the road and win a ball game because you're being antagonized by fans, you shouldn't be wearing the uniform. Just stop saying it. It's stupid. We have a caller. I'm going to be brave. 201-727, you're on the air. What's up?
Chris, it's Chris Riley.
Hey. Boy. What's going on?
What's going on, man? I was going through Facebook and I saw you were on. I figured, I'll call you, see what's going on. I haven't spoken to you in a while.
And I thought
the only way I can talk to you now.
That's
the only way I can speak. The only way I can speak to you now, because you never return anybody's calls because you're too important.
Oh wow! Wow. So it's going to be like that. Well, you got me in the middle of talking about the Knicks and Celtics, so if you have any comment about the Knicks and Celtics, obviously you weren't listening, you just decided to call, so.
Yeah, I'm doing the game tomorrow night for Chicago TV, so.
Oh, you're doing Nets and Bulls.
I'm doing Nets and Bulls tomorrow night, yeah.
All right, well, everybody who doesn't know, this is one of my friends, Chris Riley, who's a big hockey guy. We've had him on the podcast before, and we talked.
The first time. That was the first caller ever. I'm still waiting for my prize.
Yeah, and you're the second caller, and you'll probably be the third, fourth, and fifth.
Oh, I'll get my own podcast eventually, right?
Yeah, the check is in the mail, brother. So you're doing – all right, I started with the Bulls and Nets. But let me just see what you think. Since you're doing this for Chicago TV tomorrow at Brooklyn, I think the atmosphere is going to be absolutely incredible in Brooklyn tomorrow. And I think – I just said, Chris, that I truly believe with all my heart and soul that P.J. Carlissimo's team has to win this if they want P.J. Carlissimo back on the sideline.
Oh, this is do or die for him.
He's done.
This is a championship game. When you look at this on a scale of where they've come from, I mean, you know, the other night when they were leaving the building to go back to Chicago, everyone was like, oh, this is over. It's not going to come back. You know, it was a great season. You know, they did really well, you know, the whole, you know, song and dance. But, you know, I was working the Knicks game the other night for Turner and at the Garden, and all the guys from Turner, we were talking, and they said, I think we're going to be back for a Game 7. You know, they were saying that they didn't think that the Nets were done. They thought the Nets had a lot of life in them, and they were going to come back, and sure enough, they came back.
Well, listen, my whole thing with this Nets team, the Bulls won the season series 3-1 over this Nets team, but all the losses were close. I believe I worked it out before. I think the Nets lost by a combined average of 4.2 points per game in those three losses to Chicago. But, yeah, listen, you have to face facts here if you're a Nets fan. This is a Chicago Bulls team that is gutted right now, quite literally, with Nate Robinson and Luol Deng in Game 6 last night. They both were battling the flu. Deng didn't play. Robinson played 42 minutes. He gutted it out. He was throwing up on the sidelines. He scored 18 points. I mean, just a gutty, gritty performance out of him. But this is a Bulls team that the Nets should not have had to go 7 games with.
No, they should. This should have been over at least 6, maybe even 5. This should not have been. There should be not a Game 7 for this. But, you know, you can't predict on paper what's going to happen. You know what I mean? There's a lot of other emotional things that come into play, and as you see, a lot of other emotional things that come into play. I've done all the games. I've been out to every single game, and I'll tell you, game one was unreal. I mean, that was absolutely unreal. I mean, but, you know, the Bulls came back in game two and made it a series, and, you know, that home court advantage. I don't really, you know, it's interesting. People will say, oh, the home court advantage. I don't really believe in that a lot of times because if you're a professional athlete, you get up for every game. I don't care where you're playing.
I just said that. I just brought up the point, you know, there's a couple things in the sports vernacular that I really think have to go. And the one is what I talked about, and that's we're going into a hostile environment. It's so silly.
You know what I hate the most? He gives 110% all the time. I sit there and go, he's a professional athlete. He has to. There's like 25 other guys who are going to take his job.
Exactly. That's the one of them. You know, it makes me chuckle. I can't help it. It. By definition, it is correct. It's antagonistic and it's unfriendly. But at the same time, the military uses hostile to describe the enemy and,
mm-hmm.
and hostiles to describe, you know, they're going into a situation where there's going to be bullets flying around. You're not getting, you know, gunshots thrown at you when you're on the basketball court. And it's not only basketball players who bring this up. It's throughout all of sports. You're going into a hostile environment. If you're a professional athlete and you can't handle going into an environment where people are booing you and you use that as that's a preemptive, like, excuse for you to say that before you go in and play a Game 7 in Brooklyn. And the other one is, we shocked the world. If the Bulls win the series, I don't think any Tibetan monks are going to be shocked.
I like the other one, too. Chris, I like the other one, too. He comes to play every day.
We can do this all day.
Oh, there's you know, it's amazing. You listen to coaches speak, and I always look at, like, John Tortorella. I mean, he must go home some nights and just shake his head. Like, I don't know where these people come up with these. Like, I mean, it's like, you know, it's, come on. You know, they make everything, everyone's got to, like, you know, justify and verify their lives and make everything complex today. If you keep it real simple, you'll be successful. But when you muddy the waters in anything, I don't care what it is, and get it so convoluted, you can't get it back. You know, keep it real simple for everybody. I mean, all I remember, I'll bring up one more thing on this. I remember in the Super Bowl in 1990 when the Giants were going for the Super Bowl and all the Buffalo Bill fans and all the Buffalo Bills were saying, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And all I remember is Bill Parcells in the press conference turning to O.J. Anderson. He goes, we're going to hand the ball to him. Stop him. That's my game plan. Next question.
And that's basically what they did except for that.
Yeah, but I mean, that's how simple he kept it.
Mark Ingram converted and, like, got 19 yards on that 3rd and 18.
Yeah, but I mean, like, that's what he turned. I'll never forget. See, right in the middle of the press conference, you know, the media day, they said, what's your game plan? He goes, you see this guy here? I'm going to hand the ball to him. Stop him, you stop my team. That's it. Next question.
And that's what
I mean, but, like, you know, I've worked, as you have, you've spoken to a lot of athletes. And the older athletes, like, you know, the Tommy Heinsohns of the world and those guys, they still tell me today, when you go into a visiting team's building and get booed, that means you're doing your job.
Yeah.
And you know what? He said you thrive off of that even more because you want to silence the crowd.
Right.
You want to shut them up, and here's the way you can shut them up. I mean, you know, it's like Reggie Jackson. I remember when he would get up in the visiting teams, you know, Fenway Park. He hit a home run. You know how quiet Fenway Park would get?
Silence to an athlete, to a professional athlete, silence is deafening when you're on the road.
When you're on the road.
You're doing your job, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, there's no such thing as a hostile. I mean, are people tomorrow night at the Barclays Center going to be running down out of the stands onto the court?
No. They're not. They're not going to be throwing things.
No, they're not.
They wouldn't, yeah.
I'll tell you this, though. I love the crowd out there.
Oh, it's great.
Oh, it's a great. You know, it's
arena.
It's a,
they did such a great job with this arena. The way it's, the court is a stage, and everybody's close to the action. It is a tremendous venue.
Well, I'll tell you this: what I like about it, they're true basketball fans.
Yeah.
I mean, you listen to the crowd during the game; they're into it. Like they're seeing stuff out there. You know, it's not a celebrity evening. You know what I mean? It's like these are hardcore basketball fans, guys and women who really want to watch basketball, and they're not here for. You know, they have wonderful amenities and stuff, but I know a lot of people who want to go just watch basketball. That's it.
Yeah.
That's what they're there for.
There have been a lot of celebrities throughout the year that have, you know, because it is quote unquote the thing to do. It doesn't really matter who the Nets are playing. You just want to be in Brooklyn. experiencing a professional team back in Brooklyn again, but I have to 100% agree, or just for the sake of our conversation, 110% I will agree with you, that the Nets and Brooklyn and Barclays Center, I mean, it's just unbelievable. If you get a chance, if you can't get to the playoffs or if they don't survive past the Game 7, next year, do yourself a favor and just go see a game. It doesn't matter who they're playing. Just
no.
Go for the arena. Go for the aura. Just go for the experience, because it is quite the experience at Barclays.
They could play the Sacramento Kings, and that building will be packed.
Yeah, yeah, and it's loud. When the Nets are doing well, that place it can get very loud. But you brought up John Tortorella, and like Riley always does, he spins things to hockey. And I was going to get to hockey in a bit after I talked about the Knicks for a little bit. But
we'll talk about the Knicks. Talk about the Knicks.
Well, just for a little bit.
I did a Knicks game the other night.
I just started before I decided to be brave and take a phone call, and then I didn't recognize the number.
No, I'm home today. My daughter's sick, so I'm home
there
today.
You go. Which daughter?
My youngest daughter is home.
Oh, your youngest. Well, I hope she feels better. But
yeah.
I was just talking about how the Knicks, it's making me laugh. No NBA team has ever come back from an 0-3 deficit. And people are talking about it. I kind of said it was silly at the beginning of the week, but you got to just shake your head as a New York fan and say, God, I hope this doesn't happen.
Well, you know what's interesting?
The Red Sox and the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Celtics will be able to do something that no team has ever done before in their sports, and it's both to members of the New York franchises that I have been a part of my entire life as a
fan. Well, I look at it this way. They got up 11-0 right away. The Knicks got up 11-0,
yeah.
And the Celtics couldn't hit, like, anything, right?
And
I'm thinking to myself, sitting there, this game is over. Like, you know, we're 6 minutes into the first, we're probably even 3 minutes into the first quarter. I'm thinking to myself, my God, the Celtics don't even look like they came. It's like they stayed home in Boston. And slowly they started to chip away.
By the sword, Riles, let me just say this. Carmelo Anthony, he was unconscious with the how he won the scoring title down the stretch. I mean, he was shooting 60%, high 50s, 60s every single night for the last, God, it felt like for the last quarter of the season. It wasn't that long, but he did. He was just unbelievable. And now, you know, you get the reverse of that. The entire 180 is happening, and Carmelo, I believe, is 18 for 57 or 18 for
Yes, 50. He is. He's 18. I heard that this morning on the radio. He's 18 of 57.
The Knicks won their first game against the Heat this year by 20 points, and their second game against the Heat by 20 points. They did it with ball movement on offense, strong defense, and they were hitting their three-pointers.
Yeah.
This Knicks team in Game 5 did not hit their threes. J.R. Smith couldn't throw a beach ball into the Atlantic or Pacific Ocean. Hell, he couldn't throw it into a pond at that point. He couldn't hit a shot to save his life. Very reminiscent of John Starks against the Houston Rockets back in 1994. You know, Starks almost single-handedly won Game 6 of that series and won the NBA championship for the Knicks. And you could say that his poor shooting in Game 7, almost single-handedly lost Game 7 for the Knicks. So you got a lot of that parallel going on between J.R. Smith and John Starks, but I just truly believe that the Knicks have to end this in Boston tonight, because if they don't, their backs are going to be up against the wall at home, and if they would ever lose this series, and all these guys are hot stuff that are all these quote-unquote experts over all these networks. I'm not going to mention any names. But they were basically, they had the Celtics when they were down 3-0. Oh, this team is old. They just can't do it anymore. Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce.
Worst lead in sports. Is 3-1 or 3-0 in a series.
Just cha-cha-cha-cha-cha. They had the tomb ready. They were kicking the dirt on top of the casket. And I don't mean to make that, you know, because of the Knicks and their stupid funeral.
Oh, God, that whole disaster.
That was just awful. The height of ignorance.
Don't get any really good.
Getting ahead of it now and saying that, you know, people just took it and ran with it. They didn't want the funeral aspect coming out, but, you know, Kenyon Martin.
So I would have said, don't get any really ingenious ideas like that, okay?
Yeah.
Just come dressed normal to the building, okay?
I just really feel that they're reeling right now. And Carmelo Anthony, his Denver Nuggets teammates, used to call him the black hole. When he touched the ball, you never got it back. And that's something, when he does that, when he goes into this, you know, just he puts blinders on, and sticky fingers is also what they used to call him. He puts blinders on. He doesn't see his teammates out there. He tries to do everything by himself. He doesn't have to. I've seen so many times, Riles, that he's coming into the lane. He draws three guys. Tyson Chandler is basically doing
wide open by himself. I know.
In the lane by himself. And instead of trying to find Tyson Chandler, Carmelo goes up and tries a shot by himself. You have to get your teammates involved. You have to. And I just heard this morning on the radio, and it was a tremendous point. And it was Colin Cowherd, and I have to give him credit. I'm not going to steal it as my own. But he took a guy like Steph Curry, and he said Steph Curry went from star to superstar. Not only does he do it by himself, but he includes his teammates, and he does it on both ends of the floor. When he's out there on defense, he's holding the opponent down. He's obviously hitting his shots. He's obviously draining threes left and right. He gets Klay Thompson involved. David Lee's hurt. He played for a minute and a half last night. Andrew Bogut had his best game as a Warrior last night as they bounced the Nuggets, who won 57 games out of the playoffs. Carmelo Anthony has to stop with this. I have to do everything by myself. The Knicks have to get away. They're launching threes. It drove me nuts. I'm watching this game five the other night, and Carmelo Anthony, Tyson Chandler taps a rebound out. Carmelo gets it. I want to say he's about 15 feet away on the baseline. He dribbles backwards to the three-point line. How backwards? And he misses the three. How backwards is that? Get the ball. You're the leader. You're the leading scorer. Grab that rebound. Grab that tap out by Tyson Chandler. Throw up a pump fake. Drive to the basket. What are you doing? Dribbling out to the three-point line. J.R. Smith, he's taking 34-foot shots. He's 0-for-12 at one point.
Panic.
You're taking these shots and you're scratching your head like, what the hell is going on here?
Total panic.
What are you driving to the hole and getting foul calls? Why are you settling for all these long jump shots? The Celtics can't guard him on defense. Can't guard him. And they're taking these contested threes. And early in the season, I brought up those first couple wins against the Heat. There was a phone caller that called into a Sirius XM radio show and said, these three-pointers are fool's gold. And that's exactly what they're turning into. This Knicks team, they live and they die by the three-pointer. They have to get the ball movement back. They got to get everybody involved. And they have to stop taking so many threes. I get it. J.R. Smith has to heat up. You have to leave him out there. Sooner or later, he's going to hit a shot. Yeah, but when he's 0-for-12, 0-for-13, 1-for-14, it's too damn late. You have Chris Copeland on the bench, and I know that the thing on him is he can't play defense. But this guy, he's electric. He was playing towards the end of the season. He's hitting three after three after three, and now he's riding the pines. Look, I might not know what I'm talking about here, but you got to sit J.R. Smith when he's that cold and he's taking your offense underneath the court. You got to sit him down. You got to give somebody else a look. You got to at least let Copeland get a look here. Am I right or wrong? I mean, I could be wrong. Tell me.
Well, I think, you know, what it comes down to is panic. I think they get into this panic mode. I think any athlete that's out there gets into a panic mode. And what happened to the Knicks was, hey, you know what? Look at the time on the clock. Oh, my God. You know what? We better start taking threes. Because you know what? If we hit a couple of threes, we'll get hot. And you know what will happen? Okay, we'll get back in the mix now. And we'll chip away the lead a lot faster. And it'll leave us time in case they get on a run down the other end of the court. And if they get on a run on the end of the court, but we've hit, let's say, six threes, we'll still be right in the mix here. And if they pull ahead, we'll have to foul as much at the end of the game. We'll have to put the money guys in the foul line. That's the mentality that got in there, and that becomes like poison, because the next thing you know, everybody in their mind is starting to think, well, you know, he's trying to hit threes. I got to try to hit threes now. You know what? Maybe if I hit a three, he'll hit a three, and then the other guy will hit a three. And you know what? That's 9 points. Okay, and now we'll be, you know, maybe we'll only be down by, like, let's say five instead of being down by, let's say, nine or whatever it is. And it just, that psyche creeps into everybody, and the next thing you know, everybody's trying to do it themselves. Everyone goes into this panic mode. They start watching the clock all the time. They start thinking to themselves, oh, God, if I don't do that, you know, and it gets really bad. And that's what you've got, is try to calm everybody down. You know, I don't blame Woodson for this at all. I don't think it's his fault at one bit at all. I think that the guys panicked. They started to look at the clock. They started to clock watch, and they couldn't manage the clock, and they couldn't, you know, just keep playing your game. You know,
sure.
Just keep rebounding and just get the ball back up the court. Stop
Rick,
trying to hit threes.
I want you to hold on for 1 second. I got another call. I just want to give another person a chance here. I'm excited. I have another call.
Uh-oh.
So just hang on 1 second.
Yeah.
You're on the air. Go ahead. What's your name? Where are you from?
Ponte from Danbury, brother.
Hey, what's up, man? What's going on?
All is well. Listen, I'm talking about the Knicks and how they should attack the Celtics tonight. The Celtics spent the first three games playing shooting the ball terribly, and they've come back a little bit. But the bottom line is that the way that the Knicks are going to be all business tonight, and they're going to win this game.
So.
Let me tell you something. They will screen and roll the Celtics to death tonight. And as long as the Knicks stay true to their defensive posture, they're going to be a 10-point victor tonight.
Well, I hope you're correct. And you know, if you take Jason Terry out of the mix and you start playing defense on him as well, Ponte, I think the Knicks will have a shot. Especially, you know what? That's what they have to get back to, exactly what you said. Put Chandler at the top of the key, start running some pick and rolls, get the offense into a flow, and that's what they need to do. And I believe it. If we see a lot of that tonight, you are absolutely right. If they're able to do that, I think, too, that they'll win by at least 10 and wrap this up and go on to the next round, and hopefully, you know, the Hawks and Pacers will go to a seventh game, and they'll continue to beat the heck out of each other as well.
Here's the thing. You look at that lane. That lane is as wide as the Autobahn. And all they have to do is work the middle, because any time Carmelo Anthony gets the ball, they're almost running. It looks like a diamond that they're putting around him. They're putting
right.
a top person,
right.
two people, and one behind him. And he just has to get the ball back to Felton and work the middle of the floor like they did the first three games. And I'm sure they're going to have great success with that tonight, bro.
All right, Ponte, thank you for listening, and thank you for giving me a call. I appreciate it, buddy.
No problem, brother. Have a big day.
All right, you too. That was Ponte from Danbury. So another call here on the Off the Wall podcast. Hey, all right. And then I'm
yeah, I know who that was, too.
Huh? What, Chris?
I know who that guy was. That's Chris Ponte. He does stats for us.
Oh, yeah, that's right, Pants. How could I not know who Pants is? All right, well, my friends are calling. It's still calls. I'll take it when I can get it, whatever. But we have 2 minutes left in this live portion of the podcast. So really quick, I'm just going to give you my 2 cents on the Rangers, and then you can give me your 1.5-minute rebuttal. I'll try to keep it to 30 seconds, and then you got 90 seconds to wrap it
up. Okay.
And that'll be the end of this. But I just don't think this team deserves to be in the playoffs right now. I don't. They have driven me crazy all season long. Their power play is god-awful. Barry Melrose hit the nail on the head, and Barry Melrose is the ESPN guru for hockey, okay? And I've said this all season. There's no flow. There is no back and forth across the ice to make some room. There's no shots happening on the power play. They had a 5-3. 5-on-3 yesterday, last night against the Caps in Game 1. We're not able to do anything on the 5-on-3 power play. I know that happens sometimes, but they look listless. They scored one goal again. Holtby? Really? Who is this guy? Is he Patrick Waugh? Is he Martin Brodeur? With all the offensive firepower on this team, Ryle, they've got to do a little bit better than that. And I took a little bit more time, but let me have
I'll tell you this. The penalties killed them because the Capitals' power play is so strong. I think they had opportunities. They hit crossbars. I think Hagelin played exceptionally well. I think that what's happened to the Rangers is that Barry's right. There's no flow. There's no offense. There's no cycling down low. There's no setup. It's very, very simplistic. They're trying to oversimplify everything when they should just be playing their game. You have thoroughbreds on that team like Nash and Richards, and they're not playing up to their potential. And I think that right now They're flat. I think Lundqvist is flat too. I think he knows it, and I think he understands what he has to do in game two. I'll tell you this: they come down 0-2 into the Garden for game three. They're in big trouble because the Caps have incredible confidence, and Ovechkin is playing out of his mind. Out of his mind. I haven't seen him play this well defensively. He plays defensively. He plays offensively. He's utilizing the players around him so well. He's elevated his game to a new level.
Christopher, I thank you for calling once again.
You got it.
I'm just going to add one more point to this before I wrap it up, but you have yourself a good day, and I hope your daughter feels better. And thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for keeping me company and on another Off the Wall podcast.
You got it, man. Anytime.
All right, man. We'll talk soon.
Okay, take care.
All right, that was Chris Riley, one of my best friends, talking a little hockey, talking a little basketball as well. We went a little overtime here on the Off the Wall podcast, a little bonus for our YesNetwork.com and iTunes people as well. So we want to thank you for joining us today. I want to thank my callers, Chris Riley and Chris Ponte, who I should have known. He does stats for me when I do Ivy League play-by-play for football and basketball. So thanks for calling in, Pants. I appreciate it. And also, I just want to thank everybody who downloads this on iTunes. Couldn't do this without your support. All my Twitter followers who are on board, whether it's live, whether it's just, you know, driving home and you pop me on in your car after you download it on iTunes, I really appreciate the support and the following more than you will ever know. So thank you for that. I just want to wrap this up on a final Ranger point, and I want to put this on record. I know it was only one game, but I have seen this team play the bulk of their games I've watched all season long. The way the Capitals are playing right now, and the Capitals got off to an awful start, but the way the Caps are playing right now, the Rangers will be lucky if this goes five. Just wanted to throw that out there. So if I had to pick something right now in this series, I think the Caps take this in five. Over. Done. And the Rangers have to start looking to improve for next year. I know it was a quick season. I know, you know, they came into camp, according to somebody at MSG, just not ready to play, and that's via Michael Kay on the Michael Kay Show on ESPN Radio, one of my colleagues here for the Yankees. And you hear that, and you just scratch your head and say, with all the tools and with all the talent, and with that guy in net, in Henrik Lundqvist, there's no reason why this team should be playing the way they're playing. None. And they got to find out. They got to find out how to play, and they got to find out soon. Because if they don't, this one's going to end in a hurry. And speaking of ending in a hurry, the Off the Wall podcast is now over. Your bonus time is complete. Once again, thanks for all the support. Thanks for joining us here on YesNetwork.com. And we'll see you on Monday, once again, at 12:30 live on Blog Talk Radio. Have a great weekend, everybody. And don't forget our coverage of the Yankees and A's starts tonight with me and Yankees batting practice today at 6 o'clock, followed by the pregame and first pitch at the stadium, Yanks A's, a little after 7. Also, on your calendar, you should mark it for tomorrow. It'll be our last Yes Network telecast of the Nets, not because I think they're going to lose, but because we are done whether they advance or not. We will not have any more games or any more coverage here on the Yes Network. Don't know if that's true about post games. We may be able to do post games. I don't know. I have to check in on that. But this is our last game we could telecast as a game. We might be able to do pre and post. I don't know about that. I'm going to have to ask. But tomorrow night, you can watch the entire Nets game from pregame to postgame, including the game right here on Yes, starting at 7:30. I'm Chris Sheer, and this is the Off the Wall podcast, and we'll see you on Monday at 12:30 live on Blog Talk Radio. Thanks, guys.